White Area and Resistance Radio calling. This is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, here in the bunker here in north central Indiana in a rainy, it's a rainy day out, but it's nice and warm. Yeah, so if you can stand the rain, the temperature's wonderful. Yeah, but it's raining off and on. Going to turn cold pretty soon. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for your radio show. Get those donations in, and there's where you send your snail mail. And then you can go up to resist.com and get a Terrible Tommy education up there. There's everything up there that you need, and you can share it with your friends and neighbors and your kids. That's right. Well, it is October the 14th, 2014, and it's Thursday, and we've just got a sliver of the moon up there, so it'll be a while till we get a full moon in here. Well, it starts with the comments today. We're starting to get more comments, and I like that because it shows people are thinking out there, and they're commenting, and they're disagreeing, and they're agreeing, and we're just getting to where we're having a lot more fun. So it started out with Stray Dog, that continuing the discussion as to whether most of the white people living in North America are racially conscious, that is, displaying outward public signs of racism, such as not associating with mud people or engaging in any other cultural activities with them. Those white people, while on the surface, appear to actively mix and swim in the culture of our enemy, the mud people. Their underlying feelings are deep hatred for the mud people. However, they know that by displaying racism to the public, that they will be shunned by the mud society and the state. Therefore, it's safe to say that most whites, while going to nigger ball games and listening to nigger music and even talking and writing in nigger ebonics, still have a deep-rooted sense of white identity, but feel the mud societal pressure not to display such feelings. In other words, think of the situation like this. There are millions of pure white people, while outwardly displaying no signs of racism, truly believe in the separation of the races, and when a tipping point is reached, when those whites get mad enough, they will start to disassociate with mud people. However, remember that most white interactions with mud people are done for economic gain or to score social points in an egalitarian society. Behind closed doors, most whites are racist. The media will tell you that by 2045, whites will be a minority in the land they fought for. Don't count your chickens before they hatch, Uncle Sam the Jew. The enemy's own boast of bravado will be his undoing. Good to be with you, Stray Dog. Well, now I commented and sent back this morning to Stray Dog this. I appreciate your passion and would prefer your idea to be true. However, after a lifetime of observation and experience, I tend to be a cynic of the first order. We can wish and we can hope, but the proof is in the pudding. And if wishes were horses, we'd all take a ride, as my mother used to tell me. I tend to adhere to Gustave Le Bon's view of crowd psychology. If you haven't read that book, you should. The Jews are correct when they insult us with the term cattle. It's funny because their people are herded in the same manner by their ruling class. It's not enough to be white and have hidden racial feelings if they are never acted upon. And so that was my comment. And now we had a comment from one of the other associates. I agree with TNT. This country is 90% gone. Closet racism is the cause. It is speak and act now or forever hold your peace, as far as America, as we've ever known it, is concerned. I personally think it's too late for anything. I've ever held respect and love for this country as I've known it. However, I know my people, even if they do wait until 11:55 to do any friggin' thing, usually about anything, Caucasian will come out on the top. But at what cost? The U.S. dollar could collapse at any time, sending America into food, water, energy deprivation overnight. If it is no longer the global currency of exchange, anyone who is not absolutely Generation X stupid and lazy had better get their ammo, firearms, food and water, and first aid supplies in line. Anyone who is not as moronic as the aforementioned type knows that the non-Caucasians act like animals for any reason at any time, if they think they can't be stopped. All I can say is, Mr. and Mrs. Whitey, better be able to stop the BC creatures. You know, the ones you fawned over while spitting on your salt of the earth, Aryan brothers and sisters, and throwing them under the bus at every opportunity to show how elitist cool you think you are and to get whatever you hadn't earned or deserved. Well, just come beating on my snow-white door for help when that time comes to pass, and you will see someone who laughs last. All you readers have a good fall day. You hear? And that's one of the salt of the earth Aryan sisters. So we've got two or three opinions here. Well, we passed along the word that Matt Hale, or Kale, who took up the cudgel after George Lincoln Rockwell was assassinated, has died. And there's a lot of controversy over Matt Kale. I received one sort of negative. Matt Kale ran the NSWPP after Commander Rockwell was murdered, August 67. Many believed he and Dr. Pierce had a hand in the killing. That's pretty hard for me to believe, because Dr. Pierce may have been an intellect, but he was not a physically brave person. When they reburied Rockwell at the National Cemetery, Pierce hid in a tree quite a ways from where they were burying Rockwell's remains, in fear of the cops. That was from one of the guys that was there, so I know it happened. Which is sad, and it's amusing, and it's angers me too. But anyhow, that's ancient history. Kale said only his people were the real National Socialists, and other people and groups were pretend Hollywood Nazis. Well, I agree with part of that, but I think that all the National Socialist attempts in this country have been pretty much this Hollywood Nazi thing, even though people involved in it, many of them were extremely serious. I think it was, number one, too soon after the war to recreate the National Socialist Party in the United States. I think that Rockwell knew that, but Rockwell was using it to get the word out on the Jews. However, it's pretty hard to get people to listen to you as a Nazi to tell about the Jewish lies and crimes, because they just shut you off and don't believe you. So, but anyhow, I knew a lot of the guys, and some of the guys that were with Rockwell worked with me in the 70s and 80s. After losing a street battle at the RNC convention in Miami in 72, he ordered his men in units to cease all uniformed street activities. Well, at the time, that might have seemed a bad deal, but I agree. This marching around, there's got to be much better ways of getting your point across than marching around, especially in uniforms. You know, we've all I did it. I mean, you know, with Klan and everything. Of course, however, I never... Well, I think I did wear a Klan robe once down in Jackson, Mississippi when we marched. I'm not sure. No, I didn't. No, I didn't wear it. So I don't think I ever publicly wore a Klan robe. I always considered that private ceremony stuff, you know, and not something for the unwashed to gaggle at. He forced units to turn over private property to party headquarters, where he sold it and pocketed the money. Well, I know he got Joe Tomasi's house that Joe Tomasi had inherited, and Joe Tomasi had turned that house into a headquarters. And then, in the spirit of camaraderie, he did, well, I don't know whether he wanted to, but he was ordered to turn over the headquarters to Matt Cale. And then it wasn't long until Matt Cale had him kicked out of his own house, which doesn't bide too good for the moral character there. And then one of his Hollywood Nazis, it was only about 16 or 17, standing out in front of the place, putting on this show as a guard, shot and killed Joe Tomasi. Now, Joe should have known better, because he used to drive around it once in a while around the headquarters, and they'd have words back and forth. And one day, this kid must have said something that really got Joe off, and Joe stopped the car and got out and went over to beat on him, and the kid pulled out, I think, a .45 and killed him. That didn't need to happen. It was too bad because Joe was too important to the struggle to be losing his life on the street like that. Matt Cale's last gasp for money was to change the name of all his tiny group, the New Order, in hopes of stealing donations from Gerhard Lauck and the New Order he operated out of Lincoln, Nebraska. I have no evidence of this stuff. I'm just telling you that's what this one person says. I know there's always been a fight between leaders in all these organizations for money. He says, since this bastard was continuing to live off political donations, I, for one, are glad to see him dead and gone. With Ebola on the loose, many of us will soon be joining him, courtesy of Obama and the Democrat Party. Well, and the Republican Party. Why would you leave out the Republican Party? In fact, as far as power is concerned, the Republicans are more dangerous than the Democrats. I know a lot of people don't realize that, but they really are. And let's see, what else? There was more to that. But anyhow... oh, yeah, I replied and said, T.T. says, heard a lot about him, but only hearsay. Met him at Aryan Nations one time. He was a quiet man, dressed well, and gave a good speech. As far as money is concerned, many leaders of the right wing back in the day were guilty of fighting over money. And they still do. Between VNN and you got Duke and a few of these people out there, and then I can't name a bunch of them. I'm not interested anymore. But anyhow, that has gone on ever since any kind of struggle began, is fighting over money. I've never had much money, and I decided a couple of decades ago I wasn't going to fight over it, because I'm never going to have much anyhow. I think that's the one thing that probably upset the D's and the SPLC the most, that they could take my house and take my business, and I come back, you know, the next day, putting the paper together and going right on with enough money just to eke along. And they're not used to that. They're used to people collapsing and going out of the picture and then go on the road and... tell everybody they're sorry for being white. But anyhow, Matt Cale was a figure in the struggle, and I don't think you could say he did everything wrong. I never, outside the one meeting I had with him, just briefly, just a few words, All I knew was he had the ashes of George Lincoln Rockwell, and he wouldn't put them in some burial place where the rest of us could visit once in a while, you know. He kept them totally to himself, and allegedly he sort of tried to turn National Socialism into a religion. But I'm not qualified to comment on all the stuff that went on. Well, one of the people who supplied me information has sent me this big thing about this thing is heating up over in France. Unfortunately, the video was in French, and I couldn't really tell what was being said. But supposedly, these two guys were at a talk show or someplace, and the one guy's a Jew who seems to have come in out of the cold. The little Jew, Zemmour, has had enough. He has broken with his fellow Jews and defends the French racial... Just a minute here. The French racial nationalism. Huge changes going on in France. By all polls, Marine Le Pen is easy winner in 2017. I commented just briefly on that. See, where is my comment? I guess my comment disappeared, but I said, you know, I'm very suspicious and careful and a little paranoid. I said, be careful with this Le Pen deal, because she's going to try to have to make some amends with one side or the other. Now, she might go the Islamic way, but I doubt it. I think she'll probably mend fences with Jews. Maybe not. Maybe I'm all wet. But I tend to see all these conservative types, and she's more or less a conservative. When they get into power, they water down their views. Before they get into power, they're passionate, and boy, they really want to do something. But once they get into the seat of power, they tend to change. So I won't automatically come out and trust anybody, and I don't trust Le Pen, and I don't trust Putin, and I don't trust the British leader, and I don't trust Obama. I don't trust anybody. I'm sorry, boys and girls. That comes from many, many years of betrayal and all that kind of stuff. That you have to be like the cat in the jungle. Be aware at all times of everybody and never let anybody totally off the hook. Sorry, that's the way the human race is. We're just a higher breed of animal, maybe not even a higher breed of animal. I think the animals in the jungle are more honest. Well, I see that preacher Huckabee's going nuts, and instead of flying off the handle about the race problem we've got in this country and what's happening to the white race, he goes nuts over the gays, the homosexuals. Huckabee explodes at the GOP for giving up as gays break nature's law of marriage. Well, Huckabee and people like that, unfortunately, they're going to ride this social type argument all the way to the bank, just like abortion. The Republicans rode that horse for a long time, even though they were very disingenuous about it. And as far as I'm concerned, anybody that's pro anti-abortion, but pro sending all these guys, thousands and thousands of our guys to war, in a no-win war, an illegal war, war of occupation, they're liars and hypocrites. You can't be one without the other. If you want to save a baby, you want to save men who are just starting out in their life, and they're most of them in their 20s, and don't go. So any Republican that wants to go on and on about abortion, of which I'm not a big fan of abortion. However, I think that There are times when it has to be. And unless the people who criticize it are prepared to finance the child's education and food and so forth, they better keep their mouth shut. But these same people that go on and on about the poor babies, they don't step in and adopt them and volunteer to feed them or educate them or anything else. And then when they're 18, they're all for sending them over to some country to get their arms and legs blown off. So anyhow, this guys like Huckabee are just filth. Christ insanity, filth. Guys like him and AG down there in Texas with his, get 25,000 people into a big hall for a church meeting. I mean, that just shows you how people are, the herd instinct, the cattle, the goyim, and they are goyim, and it just shows you how you can never move that many people, because you're not going to, you can't promise them what they promise them, eternal life, and all that kind of stuff. You rise from the dead and all that bullshit, you know. You can't compete with that to get the white people back, and that's probably one of the biggest pitfalls is Christ's insanity to the recovering of our race. Oh my, here is earth-shaking news. As a member of two special interest groups who tend to react with great vehemence to incidents of hate speech, Jews and academics, one might think that I would be especially primed to be exercised by swastikas chalked on the Yale campus last night. Add in the fact that I am a Yalie. I teach at Yale now, and I attend Yale 22 years today. I was probably standing in the exact spot in front of the Durfee Hall where the swastikas were found, eating froyo and bouncing to Bob Marley coming out of speakers facing the quadrangle from the windows above. And I should be the single most enraged human on the planet. This is a Jew writing this. But I am not. I am saddened and a bit worried. In case it turns out that this is part of a campus trend, they're going to storm the Citadel at any moment. But I always treat cowardly, dead-of-night hate speech as the likely work of a disturbed individual, maybe two, as likely to be drunken bit of demented derring-do as a genuine expression of anti-Jewism. You know, that always gets me when they say, oh, people do it at night. Well, the reason people do it at night is because the whole world would come down on them if they did it in the daytime. If you put a big chalkboard down in every town and say, okay, free speech, I would not be upset to go down there every day at noon and put a swastika on it if I felt like it, or anything else that's pro-white. So this idea, oh, these are cowards. Well, most of the time it's just, like he says, drunken people that are pissed off about something and not that really pissed off. And when they catch them, they spend days apologizing. And the judge says, well, I'm going to give you a suspended sentence, but don't you ever be a Nazi again. Anyhow, he calls them sicko and drunks and all that kind of stuff in this article. Just because somebody took a piece of chalk and put a swastika on the sidewalk. Boy, I'll tell you, talk about thin skin. That's about as thin skin as you can get. You know, if once in a while they just laugh it off, if Jews would have the sense or the intelligence to just laugh it off, or blacks when some idiot gets drunk and puts a 3-foot burning cross in their front yard, if they just kick it over and laugh about it, it'd be much easier in life. But everybody wants to make a big deal out of everything, you know. And so anyhow, that's the deal. Yale is ruined. Yale University is now a center of Nazi propaganda and occupation. And I'll tell you a secret. a 50-50 chance it was a Jew who put it out there. Why wouldn't they? They put one piece of chalk and they put a swastika down, and then they get 2 weeks of publicity, and all the network channels come down and take a picture of it and everything. Who's to gain? Well, the Jews gain. That's why it's a 50-50 chance some drunk kike did it. Don't forget the fact that nobody wants to talk about, there's a hell of a lot of Jews that are left, have left Judaism and worked their way into the Nazi and racial movement. And if they can walk away from Christianity and Judaism, and they're physically an Aryan type, well, why not? Like I walked away from Christianity and became an atheist, a non-believer. Big deal. I just did it. I don't see why other people can't do the same thing. Of course, you have to judge them biologically. If they're not fit biologically, then you can't let them in. But anyhow, that's something that can get a lot of argument going, I know. Like one of the guys this morning sent me this oh my God story that now they say Jefferson Davis is the president of the Confederacy's wife was part Negro. Well, when they are black, and when they say that, you know, the visions come up in people's minds that she's a bubble-lipped nigger. Well, she could have had a black ancestor several generations back, and that doesn't mean she's not white. I mean, that would have been bred out of her a long time, her family a long time ago. I mean, the South had the rules of 1/16th or 1/32nd. I forget. I'm going to have to recheck that out. But you can't be down so narrow-minded and like that to say that if someone had some kind of a Indian or a black in their background several generations back, that they're not acceptable. Well, I think that's going too far. And like I say, the South used the either 1/16th or 1/32nd rule. And otherwise, you'll never get any place. That's like when the National Socialists in Germany tried to trace the SS men's history back to, you know, I don't know, way, way, way back. And all of a sudden, they're having problems because they couldn't, most of them couldn't do it. So they had to let down the requirements of the SS to not go back so far, you know. And the way the Jews had assimilated in Germany, to where there were Jews all over the place, physically you couldn't tell them the difference from anybody else. And a lot of those, when they started clamping down on the Jews in Germany, were shocked out of their minds when they all of a sudden were called up that they were part Jews. They didn't even know it. I mean, there wasn't a Jew in the family, you know, two or three generations back. So they toted them off in a freight car. That was crazy. That was even a distortion of the Nuremberg laws. Well, let's see what the Arizona cops are up to today.
Put your hands where I can see them. I look right at you. Turn the car off. What's your name?
Diego Los Sanchez.
Huh?
Diego Los Sanchez.
Can you see the llave? Armas?
No.
No armas en el carro? Keep your hands where I can see them. No te muevas.
¿Qué pasó?
¿Tienes licencia?
Sí, señor.
Enséñame la licencia ahorita. Si haces algo, aquí te mato. Enséñame la licencia. ¿Me entiendes?
Sí, también. Te estoy grabando también.
No te muevas. Pon las manos acá arriba. ¿Tienes armas en el carro? ¿Estás seguro?
Sí, ¿qué pasa?
¿Hay algo en el carro?
No, si quieres me bajo.
¿Qué está aquí?
Vengo a trabajar, mi herramienta.
¿Pura herramienta?
Sí.
¿Estás seguro?
Seguro.
Ok, no te bajes. Quédate ahí. Si te mueves, aquí te chiteo.
¿Está bien?
Stopped by this cop, he said he'd kill the guy if he didn't do something, but I didn't hear anything like that, but they were speaking in Spanish, so I don't know. maybe this is a false flag story. Well, this one's a story out of Colorado. Let's see if we can get a clear view of supposedly some people were killed by the cops and shot in the back.
Doug Olson at my dental. Ford rocked by gunshots. Now, people want to know what prompted an officer to fire his gun.
Witnesses tell us the man died after being shot in the back. Neither police nor the Colorado Bureau of Investigations will confirm that he is dead. The shots were fired at a home near Swink Avenue and 3rd Street in Rocky Ford, which is about an hour east of Pueblo. KRDO News Channel 13's Emily Allen is live in Rocky Ford. She's talking to family and neighbors and has new information about the victim. Emily?
Jonathan and Rana, people on this block say that the man who lived in this home was a quiet and respectable guy. Now, neighbors and family want to know what happened here early this morning.
It's an awful thing to happen in such a small community.
Yellow police tape stands out in this small town. It's an unfamiliar sight.
Everyone knows everybody, you know, and it's just, it's something major. Something real major.
Brian Otero says he's shocked by what happened to his neighbor.
Through social media and stuff like that, we heard that he had got shot twice in the back from people that work at the hospital. He was always real respectful. I don't see anything that on his side that would, you know, make it seem to me that he would do anything to get shot.
The victim's sister-in-law says that he walked through that front door shortly before 2 a.m. She says after that, a police officer forced his way through the front door, and that's when the two started shouting at each other.
He's standing right next to his mom. His back turned towards this officer, and he shot him twice in the back. And then after he fell, he pepper sprayed him. And he had handcuffed his fiance for reasons I don't know why. And then his mom had went to call the cops. And this cop took her phone and threw it against the wall.
A family is left with questions for police.
He just showed up. No one knows why. No one knows. It just all happened unexpectedly.
The Colorado Bureau of Investigation has been called in. The officer who fired the gun has been put on administrative leave.
I don't know what to think.
Investigators are trying to figure out what happened leading up to the shooting. A question everyone wants answered. The police chief told me the district attorney's office is going to be putting out new information tomorrow. We will bring you that information as soon as it is released. In Rocky Ford, Emily Allen, KRDO, News Channel 13.
Sounds like a pretty open and shut case to me. I mean, the cop followed him into the house and shot him in the back. How do you explain that? And then he pepper sprayed him after he shot him. And then his mother tried to call the police. And the cop took her phone away from her and threw her up against the wall. Whoopee. That's, what do you call that? The cops are supposed to be friends of the people, protect and serve. Right. I think it was down in Texas where they put out a deal. They were interviewing young men to be police officers. They interviewed 50 guys. 50. And only 12 of them would qualify, even to get into start training. 12 out of 50. The rest of them were all kinds of problems. And it seems that the ones that are the worst, like we've said before, are the ones that come back from the fighting in the Middle East. They are a real problem in many cases, not all cases. Well, I see the Jaimes are all upset again. Boy, I'll tell you, those people must have ulcers. They got to have stomach problems. Retail giant Sears and Roebuck, now it's just Sears, is under fire from Jewish groups for offering a man's punk rock swastika ring on its marketplace website, the Washington Times reports. Oh, my God! According to the description, the ring was not for neo-Nazis or any Nazi implication, unquote. But they're going to make sure you look beautiful at your next dinner plate. Or whereas Sears or were as Sears pulled the item after outraged customers contacted them on Twitter. Probably one little Jew or one little crazy-ass Christian. They always act like there's a big rush. Oh, the whole store went crazy. Everybody was, they were crying. They were rolling around on the floor. They didn't know what to do, man. It was terrible. It was an emergency. Yeah. Turns out it was Sears Marketplace, which seems to be separate than selling the ring in the store. So that's Sears is out. And they pulled it immediately because of our standards and blah, 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 and fear of the Jews. Them Jews are going to get us if we don't get rid of that ring. Well, Jaime, I got to give you a secret. I wear a ring with a Viking head on it, thunderbolts on one side and a swastika on the other, 24 hours a day. Now, complain about that. And I've run into dozens and dozens of people in stores and so forth, especially people when you go to pay your bill, that have said those are both lovely rings. The one ring on my right hand is the wolf. And then the left hand is the Viking division ring. And they don't get all upset and excited and pissed off. They say it's a beautiful ring. Of course, probably I should say that if they get me in a corner on it, say, well, my uncle took this off the dead hand of Adolf Hitler and brought it back as a souvenir. But I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't try to get out of it. I just say, well, there it is. It's an ancient symbol of the Aryan race. Just have to have balls and a sense of humor and a way with people. If you're friendly to people and they see a swastika ring on you, they treat you a lot better than if you're a scowling, uptight, pissed off type person. And that's the way life is. You know, I like it when things like this ring come up and the Jews go crazy. And they go crazy about everything. Well, there's an adage in the sales community and merchandising that people become numb after a while. That's why they have to keep becoming more and more radical with advertising. Because repeating the same stuff over and over and over and over again, people begin to turn off to it. And a lot of people have turned off to this Jew crying bit. And the more they scream and yell on a 24-hour basis, the more people are going to turn off to them. So I think it's wonderful. Keep it up, Jaime. There's a book written about this by a very, very sharp guy, and I forget the title, about the sales resistance type thing. It's they have to keep every day dreaming up with new angles to sell things. Because people get one ad enough and they turn off to it. That's just the way it goes. Well, there's a new book out, coming out, on the lifelong story of playwright Eugene O'Neill, A Life in Four Acts. He became quite controversial in 1924 over O'Neill's play All God's Chillin' Got Wings. The controversy surrounded the play, which is about a love affair between an Irish-American woman and an African-American man, in other words, a Negro, should encourage people. Encourage them to what? First and foremost, to be thankful we live now. Oh, are you kidding? Rather than back in 1924, yes, we have tons of racial and religious problems. No, not enough in 2014, but they're nothing compared to the bad old days when O'Neill was writing. I wonder if he ever screwed a nigger. Everyone, it seemed, was offended by O'Neill's play, from the esteemed Columbia University professor George O'Dell. Eugene O'Neill is responsible for the profanity and insanity on the American stage today, unquote, he thundered. to the Society for the Prevention of Vice and Crime, to the KKK, to the Salvation Army, for heaven's sake. Sounds pretty good to me. The Long Island chapter of the Ku Klux Klan writes, Dowling threatening to blow up the theater on opening night. The Texas Klan member demanded the immediate dispatch of O'Neill on the grounds that he's a Catholic and hence doubtless trying to stir up the Negroes to arm and march on Washington and burn down the Nordic White House. Well, they get it a little bit wrong, but they may be partially right. As Dowling notes, the Klan at this time was no mere fringe group, rallying behind an anti-immigrant, anti-Catholic, as well as racist message. The Klan was 5 million strong in the 20s, with members serving as state senators, governors, and lawmakers. Well, and they also put together the Mount Rushmore, Mr. Bugglemills, a Klan member. A Klansman from Georgia threatened O'Neill's son in a letter, prompting the great playwright, I wouldn't say for sure he's great. I don't think I've ever read him or watched anything that he did, whose father was a famous Kilkenny-born actor, to respond with a simple, straightforward obscenity, "Go fuck yourself." Signed, Gene Tyrone O'Neill. Well, I'll back anybody that wants to tell people to fuck off, you know, even if I disagree with them. But at least he comes out and says it the way he thinks. I believe in total free speech. You know that. As Dowling writes, O'Neill's actual middle name was Gladstone, named for the 19th century British prime minister who favored home rule for Ireland. Tyrone is the country from which O'Neill's tribe originated. It's probably that by signing his letter this way, O'Neill was defiantly identifying himself as an Irish Catholic, another group hated by the Klan, which was a mistake. I agree they should have hated Christ Insanity, but not the Irish. Unfortunately, it wasn't just the Klan who was angry at O'Neill. It seemed as if all the feeble-witted, both in and out of the KKK, were, O'Neill himself later said, including Irish Catholics, who threatened to pull my ears off as a disgrace to their race and religion, to equally infuriated Nordic Kluxers who knew that I had Negro blood, or else was a Jewish pervert masquerading under a Christian name in order to subversive propaganda for the Pope. Wow. 90 years later, as Dowling's excellent new biography makes clear, we owe a great debt of gratitude to Eugene O'Neill for pushing race mixing. He bravely forced ancient hatreds or ancient loves into the light, paving the way for our imperfect but nevertheless more open and tolerant society. You know, open and tolerant means stupidity. You got a hole in your head. Let them all come in, fornicate with everybody. Yeah, that's open and tolerant. Eventually, this message may even make its way to the paranoid anti-Catholics on the other side of the Holland Tunnel. Whoa. I love it. Yeah, well, he just used notoriety and all this reaction to build his career. That's all. I think he was a drunk, too, if I remember, but I don't know for sure. Well, I see that this slut Kim Kardashian and nigger Conway West wedding circus in May touched down in Ireland for the honeymoon segment, and apparently their sojourn in Limerick and Laos helped to boost tourism numbers in Ireland. This from no less than the source than the Irish tourism minister, Paschal Donohoe. Quote, it had a natural indirect effect, Donohoe told the Daily Mail, of the Kimye effect on tourism. Quote, people looked at Kim and Kanye coming to Ireland and it made them think, if it's good enough for these race-mixing sons of bitches and that whore Kardashian, There must be something worth exploring for us, rest of us perverts. It also encouraged the journalists to want to write about Ireland and how they loved race mixing and loved the niggers who might not have done so before. Kim reportedly pitched a fit when she was in Ireland because of the lousy weather. Well, people like you can't stand Aryan weather. That's your problem. Bad cell phone service, not enough shopping. Blah, 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 blah. Kimbie hiked and went to the movies, and the reality TV star denied that she had a bad time or that she and her hubby left an unpaid bill at Castle's Oliver in Limerick. There you go. They didn't pay their bill. Donahue says that the end of the year forecast for tourism figures looks good. If we can just get more Hollywood whores and nigger football players and all that kind of stuff up here, we'll have a whole lot more people coming to Ireland to spend their money. Isn't that nice? And you know that's from the article verbatim. Well, they're going on and on about what a rat Columbus was, and he had a bunch of Jews with him on those excursions, so maybe he was. I don't know. But anyhow, they're going on and on about him, so I have a suggestion. I want all you bastards that have a lot of money, and especially all you liberal progressives, to give your deeds to your property to the Indians down in the Caribbean. Now the Indians have been pretty much pushed out as niggers, so they've inherited the farm down there. So all you neocons that feel that way, and all you progressives on the race issue or anything else that love the Mongols so much, I want you to deed all your property back over to pay back what Columbus did to your poor natives. Seems only fair to me, you fucking hypocrites. Well, move over, you Italians. Here come the Irish. While Christopher Columbus is generally credited with having discovered, well, he didn't discover America. He discovered a bunch of islands in the Caribbean, but that's all right. In 1492, a 1521 Spanish report provides inklings of evidence that there were, in fact, Irish people settled in America prior to the Columbus journey. Well, there was Vikings here long before they were, too. So, but anyhow, let's see what he says here. Researchers feel certain that there was a colony of Irish folk living in what was now South Carolina when Christopher Columbus thought he had discovered the New World, writes Richard Thornton for the Examiner. I get a kick out of the Indians and people like that, which is sort of funny. They say, well, we didn't know it was lost. We didn't know they discovered the New World. It was not new to them. In 1520, Peter Murder de Anglia, a historian and professor, was appointed by Charles V to be chronicler of the new consul of the Indies. Though Martyr died in 1526, his report, founded on several weeks of interviews, was published posthumously in a book named De Orbo Nova, about the New World. The book has been published and translated numerous times in the centuries since then. The passages concerning the land that would become Georgia and the Carolinas were always included but generally ignored, says Thornton. Wow, man, this is hot news. While interviewing Spanish colonists, Martyr took note of their vicious treatment of the Chicora Indians. Yeah. I suppose if those Indians, we had enough of their Indians or Mongols, they'd have done the same thing to them. However, the Spanish had advanced weapons and so forth and knew how to fight. However, he also included in his report that the Spanish colonists had a very good relationship with another nearby colony, which Martyr reported to be named Duhare, D-U-H-A-R-E. Physically, the people of Duhare appeared to be European, according to the Spanish colonists in the area. The people of Duhare had red to brown hair, tan skin, gray eyes, and were noticeably taller than the Spanish. According to Spanish accounts, the people of Duhare were Caucasians, though their houses and pottery were similar to those of the American Indians. American Mongols. The king of Duhair was said to be named Datha and was described by the Spanish as being a giant, even when compared to his peers. Well, that sounds to me more like Vikings. The Irish are not, for the most part, big, tall people. But anyhow, I wouldn't be upset if the Irish had a colony in the United States. Even when, okay, he had five children and a wife as tall as him. Datha had brightly colored paint or tattoos on his skin that seemed to distinguish him from commoners. Despite Martyr's report that included the apparently unique tribe of Duhair, the believed predecessors of the Cree Indian tribe, more recent scholars are wary of the possibility of a Caucasian tribe at that time in America. Well, we know the Vikings were here 7,000 years ago, 8,000 years ago, something. In 1922, the Smithsonian Institute published a very early history of the Cree Indians and their neighbors by renowned ethnologist John W. Swanton. It included much of Martyr's passages on Duhair, but was prefaced with the contemptuous remarks by Swanton that the story couldn't be true and that the Duhair were probably Siouan tribe of Indian, explains Thornton. However, later in 2006, People on One Fire, a nationwide team of Native American scholars, primarily of Cree Indian heritage, began a comprehensive research program to obtain more accurate details and knowledge on North America's pre-European history. As part of their research, they began to attempt to translate every single Native American word that was translated by Spanish. While many of those words were easily translated by modern Cree, Alabama, Coasati, or Choctaw dictionaries, the words associated with the province of Duhair defied translation until 2011. Researchers began to investigate the similarity of Irish rock carvings to those in the state of South Carolina. One member of the People of One Fire team came across an ancient Irish lullaby entitled Bain Nam Fide. On milk of deer I was reared. On milk of deer I was nurtured. On milk of deer beneath the ridge of storms on crest of hill and mountain, unquote. The lullaby was particularly significant as the deer were prominent resources for the Duhair people. According to Spanish sources, the Duhair maintained large herds of domesticated deer and made cheese from deer milk. The excess male deer population was fattened with corn for butchering. The deer stayed in corrals within the villages at night, but grazed in herds in the daytime, accompanied by deer herders and herd dogs. Neighboring people knew not to hunt them. The Duhair words recorded by the Spanish were able to be translated using Gaelic dictionaries. Duhair, in fact, was found to be translated to either place of the clan, Hair, or if the Duhairs came from west of the Shannon River, it meant Duhair, place of the Irish. Further solidifying the Irish roots of Duhair, it was found that Datha, the name of the leader of Duhair, was a standard medieval Irish Gaelic word that means painted. Datha of Duhair was remembered for being tattooed or painted, as if to separate himself from the commoners' tradition among the Celts. Also in 2011, the mystery of the Reinhard Boulder, an ancient and mysterious carved rock that was found years ago on the Klein Farm in the Hickory Log area of Cherokee County in Georgia near the Etowah River, was put to rest after striking similarities between its carvings and rock carvings that originated around the Atlantic coast of Ireland were identified. Well, there you go, all you people with Irish background. I think we got quite a few that are in contact with us. So there you go. You got here before Columbus. Yeah. In fact, you were down in Dixie before Columbus. Okay, that's it on that issue. I think it's pretty interesting. Now, if you go to IrishCentral.com, if you think you've got an Irish background, they have a list on there of the top 300 Irish family names. 300 of the top names of Irish. So you might want to go through it. Maybe you're one of those top ones. Well, I see old Jeb Bush is running around up in Michigan supporting Rick Snyder up there in Michigan. I don't think Rick Snyder was that popular. I forget some of the things I've heard, but if they're running Jeb Bush, I think they're grasping at straws. In fact, I don't see anything in the Republican stable that looks interesting. As far as, I'm not talking about them being wonderful people and great leaders. I'm talking about them having a persona and a speech abilities and the things that go along with that with politics. And so to depend on Jeb Bush, I don't see it, but I don't see the Republicans having really much of anything. So I think my money's still safe that Hillary Clinton will be the next president.
Whether you like it or not.
And if you think oil drilling and fracking now is bad, wait till Hillary gets in. She's going to open it wide open. Well, Doom Goddess tells us monarch butterflies are the Aryans of the insect world. Signed, Doom Goddess. Well, I'll take your word for it, Doom Goddess. They are beautiful, that's for sure. But I'll have to think about it. You know me. What I'm interested in is what is the Jew of the insect world? Think about that one for a while. Maybe even the Negro of the insect world. I was going to play you a clip about the conditions in the Chicago schools, but you can imagine some guy has really belled the cat and let the information out. 49 schools have closed, and the schools are filthy. Absolutely filthy, with trash everywhere, cockroaches everywhere, and rotten food, too, in these schools. And you know where those schools are. They're most likely all the ghetto schools. So anyhow, that's the situation. And no wonder kids just want to leave school. But you see, this mayor of Chicago, Obama's butt buddy, hired an outfit from Ohio to take care of the schools, the custodial services. Now, their idea is to have what they call roving custodian groups that go from school to school, and they claim it'd be super spick and span and cleaned up wonderfully. Well, it isn't as clean as it was before they started. So there's another boondoggle that this so-called mayor got the people of Chicago into. But still, we've got to talk about, we're dealing with a large percentage of dirty people. They're dirty at home and they're dirty at school. And the hallways are filled with trash. And the cockroaches are in and everything. Trash sits around, evidently, they say, for sometimes weeks in these basically black schools. So, can you imagine a teacher having to work in that mess? Or even a black person who's reasonably clean and so forth, having to come into those schools every day? Wow. It's just going to cook until it explodes. That's the way it goes. Well, that's it for Tuesday. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. And you have a good day, a good evening, and 14-5. Keep your mouth shut, keep your pie hole shut, and continue your existence as a lone wolf. And I saw a movie last night, the werewolf movie. Pretty damn good. And if all our people are as strong and vicious as that those werewolves, we can take on 20 times our size. Yeah, right. I'll see you tomorrow.
Now, all of this stupid bullshit that children have been so crippled by has grown out of something called the self-esteem movement. The self-esteem movement began in 1970, and I'm happy to say it has been a complete failure. Because studies have repeatedly shown that having high self-esteem does not improve grades, does not improve career achievement, it does not even lower the use of alcohol, and most certainly does not reduce the incidence of violence of any sort. Because as it turns out, extremely aggressive, violent people think very highly of themselves. Imagine that. Sociopaths have high self-esteem. Who would have thunk, huh? I love when this kind of thing happens. I love when these politically correct ideas crash and burn and wind up in the shit house. Here's another one that bit the dust. This practice of playing Mozart during pregnancy so the fetus can hear it. It was supposed to increase intelligence. Didn't work. Didn't work. All it did was sell a lot of CDs and piss off a whole lot of fetuses.